Hi, Matt here. Before we get started, two quick opportunities for us to interact. This Thursday, February 26th at 8 a.m. Pacific, I'm hosting an AMA, Ask Matt Anything, in our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community. I'd love to see you there. And also, don't forget to take advantage of our Valentine's Day free Coach Matt AI offering. Join our learning community at fastersmarter.io/learning. Now, a word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you quality content free of charge. Hi, Matt here. I recently have done some international travel, and I'm always amazed when people can speak the language of the country they're visiting. So for my upcoming trip, I'll be using Babbel, my go-to app for science-backed language learning. Babbel lets me practice real-life conversation, step-by-step, without the stress. It helps me build the confidence to speak up when it matters, from ordering a coffee or chatting with new friends. However you learn best, by listening, speaking, reading, or writing, Babbel adapts to your style and keeps you motivated with personalized learning plans, real-time feedback, and progress tracking. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 55% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/TFTS to get up to 55% off. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Communication is a vivid, visceral experience, a true connection between you and the other person. I'm Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Today, I'm excited to speak with Alan Alda. Alan is an acclaimed actor, writer, and director. He is also the founder of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University, where he has dedicated his efforts to helping scientists and health professionals communicate more effectively with the public. He is the author of several books, including his latest on communication, If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? And finally, he hosts an awesome podcast called Clear and Vivid. Alan, thank you for being with me today. I so look forward to our conversation.
I do too, Matt. Thank you. Thanks for talking with me.
Yeah. Shall we get started?
Yeah. Let's go.
Excellent. So you've dedicated a large part of your career to helping technical, scientific folks communicate more clearly. Can you share with us what drives that energy and passion for this topic?
Well, I'm passionate personally to know more about the way the universe works. And that means scientists explaining to me in terms I can understand it. Science can't do its work unless it gets funded. And it can't get funded if people don't understand what the scientists are trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish. And that means they have to really understand what's going on in the minds of the policymakers, the public, so they can feel comfortable funding it, but also so they have the ability to caution the scientists about concerns they have that are ethical. But you can only raise a question if you understand what the basic stuff is about.
So you were motivated, it sounds like, out of your own curiosity, but the real driver is to help these very technical scientific people be able to communicate in a way that those of us who have less knowledge can better understand what it is they're doing. And you've highlighted a really important topic that we've heard many times on this podcast, which is it really boils down to understanding your audience and the way you speak to politicians, the way you speak to the lay public, the way you speak to colleagues in a different discipline has to be different based on your appreciation of what they know and what they don't know.
And you have to do some work to find out what they do know and what they're interested in, how they understand certain things. You know, there was a landmark meeting of nanoscientists and neuroscientists when President Obama brought together a group to work on the brain. I've been told by several people who were actually in the room that they argued for hours, the neuroscientists and nanoscientists, about the meaning of one word, the word probe. It meant something to each group in a different way. So it can be very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes down to the words we use. And often people will use lots of jargon and terminology that people don't understand, or maybe a word that everybody understands, but they understand it to mean something differently. Which leads to my second question. I have seen you often talk about communication pitfalls and mistakes people make, such as jargon and assumptions. What strategies do you recommend and teach for avoiding these issues and ensuring that our messages are accessible for everyone?
The way you get and understanding of other people. I don't think it's through tips. At the Center for Communicating Science, we put people through experiential learning. We use exercises drawn from the study of improvisation, for instance, not to get the scientists able to make things up on their feet, but the experience that's much more central to improvisation, which is connecting to another person, to being aware of what their face is telling you, what their body language, what their tone of voice is telling you, and to speak to that, to make that connection. For me, the difference between tips and experience is really, it's a vast difference. For instance, there's an example that kind of lingers in my mind, is there's a speed sign in the country near where I live, and it says 20 miles an hour. And I routinely have gone past that at 40 miles an hour until I was stopped by a policeman and given a ticket. The speed sign is the tip. The ticket is the experience.
I appreciate the analogy. I would love for you then to share with us perhaps a specific experience that you helped these scientists work through so that they can learn that, how to read a room. And what I hear you saying, the core essence of avoiding these pitfalls is really being other-focused and not self-focused. It's really thinking about how the message is landing and observing that. What kind of activities and exercises and experiences do you put these folks through to help them develop that skill?
One of the most basic things we do is mirroring. For instance, you would be my mirror, and every move I make would be mirrored by you in real time with no echo.
Mirroring is a phenomenon that I'm very familiar with, and it's one where you mimic the other person, and the activity you're doing requires to be very present-oriented and to be very other-oriented so that you can be in that moment. And what it does is it opens up the aperture, if you will, to paying attention to a lot of things that many of us, when we communicate, we just don't see. We're just so wrapped up in saying what we want to say. So it truly is an experience that people can learn from and sensitize themselves to those other folks. In your teaching and most recent book, you discussed the importance of clarity and vividness in communication. Why are these so important? And what advice or guidance do you have for enhancing clarity and vividness?
I think clarity is really important. Clarity and vividness. And that's why I call my podcast Clear and Vivid. Vividness is important because that's how things stick in the mind. You know, I'm fond of that story about the speed sign and the ticket because it's visual. You see the idea visually.
Vividness is very important, and I certainly see how vividness and clarity together can really help someone absorb the information that you're communicating. Do you have reflections on reflection about communication? Do you encourage people to think about what worked and what didn't?
I do, and I do it myself. I'm very, very interested in watching a YouTube of two people talking or two people at a dinner table and judging where they're on the rails and where they go off the rails. And it's when they're not connecting with one another. And what you get is two dueling monologues. And each monologue is mainly interesting to the person making it. And the other one is waiting for the cue that now it's their turn to talk and generally stay on topic, but not necessarily.
Right. So a conversation is not just turn-taking monologues. There's a connection there. What have you found helps bring that connection about? I'll use an example when you and I did not know each other before we started this, but when we started, before we hit record, I felt that you did a few things to help connect to us. You connected through a common experience that I thought brought us closer together through a third shared experience that we both had.
I think I did do that deliberately, maybe not consciously, but I do that at the beginning of every conversation that I do on the podcast. And we've done 300 of them or more so far. And I always feel the first few seconds are very important to establish that we're just two folks talking. Because everybody needs to get a little relaxed. When I was a young actor, I'd be nervous on opening night. I'd hear the roar of the crowd through the house curtain, and I'd think, they're here to judge me. And then I began to get the awareness, finally, that they paid money to come see the show to have a good time. And I thought, all I have to do is what I know how to do, and they'll probably have a good time. And not only got relaxed, I got eager to see them, eager to be among them.
The last point that you made, I think, is critical for all of us to understand. It is, I believe, and those of us who study communication and anxiety that goes with communication, believe that we are being judged when we communicate, but how we frame that judging. In your case, as an actor who people were paying to come see you perform, they wanted to be there. And in most cases, when people present in a meeting or at a conference, people are choosing to be there. They're not coming there saying, I want to judge this person presenting. They're there to learn or to have an experience that you get to contribute to. And by reframing that in much the way it sounds like you did, it can change your whole approach. Instead of something that is one where you have to be defensive and guarded, you can actually embrace that connection and that offering that you have to make. And I think that's really fundamental in helping people feel more confident.
And that feeling of confidence leads to something else that you might not have expected, which is, well, it brings the real you out. There's nothing more engaging than the real you, not the prepared you, not the rehearsed you, not the you that's wondering if your tie is straight or is there a smudge on your coat. You know, it's who you really are in your openness, in your weakness, and in your strength. And to allow yourself to do that, and you can only do it through connection, in my opinion, through accepting the presence of the other person and respecting that presence. When you have that, then you let you out. And if you're talking with another person, it lets the other person's person out as well.
It certainly is a virtuous cycle. And that's where I think the paralysis of anxiety and concern blocks that from happening. And if we can move ourselves beyond the insecurity and the doubt, then we can allow that to come out, as you shared happened for you. It strikes me that in the latter part of your career, you've gone from speaking words, maybe words that you wrote or others wrote, to asking lots of questions. Do you have advice and guidance on how to ask good questions to get good answers and good connection? You interview for your podcast. I know you do a lot with scientists. What makes for a good question?
I think really wanting to know, really being curious. If you want something interesting to come out of the person, ask that person the question you really want the answer to. It's not, tell me about chapter one, now tell me about chapter two.
I would be delighted if you asked me a question that you're curious about either our conversation or the things that get talked about on this podcast.
I am curious to know how you started getting into this, because it's something that's interior to our souls more than it is something like the mechanics of a car.
I grew up as a son of a teacher, an elementary school teacher, and a lawyer. My mother was very creative, and her language was very flowery. It was all about engagement. I mean, she was teaching fourth graders. And my father, on the other hand, was a lawyer, and it was very regimented and had to be structured and concise and clear. And I remember watching their communication patterns and being fascinated by it. When I was about 7 or 8, my mother got very frustrated with my brother and me for all the toys and tchotchkes we had around. And she said, we're having a garage sale. And I grew up in a community, Alan, where there were lots of garage sales. And my mother said, we need to make sure our garage sale signs stand out because otherwise nobody will see it. So she had us insert a B in the middle of the word garage, which made it a garbage sale, not a garage sale. And we sold more stuff that weekend than anybody in our whole neighborhood. And my mother to this day thinks it's because our sign stood out. I think people thought we were stupid. But my point is, I learned at that age that words, that language can actually change behavior. And ever since then, I've been fascinated by it, went to school, graduate school, studied it, and now have the pleasure of teaching it. And that's really where I think my origin comes from.
How old were you at the garage sale?
7 or 8. I can still remember the toys she made me sell.
That's great. But talk about being vivid. To put the B in the garage sign is really eye-catching.
Yeah, I want to come back to this notion of what makes for a good story, because you have told several stories and vividness is clear. Are you strategically thinking as you're telling your stories about inserting vividness, or is it just something that you do naturally? Because not everybody is an equally good storyteller. I think you can learn to be a better storyteller. How conscious or unconscious is it for you personally?
I think a lot of it has become unconscious, become the way I talk. But good storytelling goes back to Aristotle. And although he talked about what made the story on the stage work, how a play works best. I really think it applies to almost every kind of communication where there's a story involved, where somebody is trying to achieve something, something gets in the way, and they have to overcome that obstacle to get what they want. And for me, the joke is that if they get what they want, it's a comedy. If they fail to get what they want, it's a tragedy. But that idea of being in motion, being in action, you can identify with the person. I tell a story about myself and I encounter something like the cop giving me a ticket. I think I'm the hero of that story for a while. I don't want the ticket and I don't like having learned the lesson, but I got it now.
Right. What I hear in that answer is that there's a structure to story and you then hang on that structure, vivid description, personal experience, revealing information, disclosure, and that's what makes for a successful story. I think having a structure is really important.
You brought up in my mind something that I do deliberately, which is being aware that the person I'm talking to is probably saying to themselves at some point, why is he telling me all this? So unless I know that a memory that I have associated with the story, unless I know that it is connected to the punchline, I leave it out. I don't give every detail I remember happened. When people tell stories, it's seductive. You're reminded of elements. I was in Grand Central Station. I was going to visit my brother, but he wasn't going to be there because he was on vacation. Who cares? It's not connected to the point you're making.
Right. My mother has this saying, tell the time, don't build the clock.
That's good. She's a good teacher.
Yes, but I think what you're highlighting there is a lot of us add detail. We build the clock that's not necessary to be built.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. These sponsorships support the cost of making our show, allowing us to bring it to you free of charge. Hi, Matt here. Career coaching often comes through our workplaces, which can be a great starting point. But sometimes you want space to focus on your priorities, not your organization's. That's where Strawberry.me comes in. It's career coaching you choose for yourself. You answer a few quick questions, get matched with a vetted coach, and in many cases, you can start within 24 hours. You choose the coach, you decide the goal, and you get to talk honestly about what actually matters, whether that's a promotion, a pivot, burnout, or even leaving. There's no HR involved, no performance review lens, and if it's not the right fit, you can switch coaches. What I appreciate is the sense of agency. When you're feeling stuck, waiting rarely helps. If you've been thinking something needs to change, you don't need permission to explore that. Go to strawberry.me/TFTS. It's coaching focused on you. Think of it as therapy for your career.
Well, Alan, before we end, I like to ask three questions of everybody. One I create just for you, and the other two I ask all the guests who've ever been on the show. Are you up for answering these?
Sure.
So my first question, just for you, you are quite an accomplished communicator and somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about communication. I think you and I both agree that we can always get better in our communication. What is one area of your communication that you're working on to improve?
I work probably every day, most of the day, on being able to really listen to the other person. But you can't learn it well enough. There's always more to learn, and there's always more, a new way to realize that if you do that, you're listening better.
I tried my best to listen to what you said, and I would agree that listening is a great skill to work on. Question number two, who is a communicator that you admire, and why?
Two guys, Brian Greene and Stephen Strogatz, because they love physics and mathematics. They really love it, and they really love helping you understand it. There's no fakery about it. Let me see if I can find a way to say this, that you have the same excitement about it that I do. And I really admire that in both of them.
So it sounds like some authenticity and passion for getting the information across is key there. My third and final question for you. What are the first three ingredients that go into a successful communication recipe?
Connecting, communicating, and clarity. And the thing about all three of them is that they're all based on hearing what the other person is really saying, really getting inside the person's head, letting the person be real to you, accepting them, letting them in.
That notion of accepting and having the person be real to you, I think, is really powerful. I thought you were going to say the three things they all have in common is they start with the letter C. And that's true too. Alan, it has been a true delight to speak with you, talking to somebody who has spent the time you have reflecting on what makes for effective communication is beneficial for me and hopefully for all of our listeners. The idea of being vivid, being clear, and being connected are essential for communication and for furthering the goals that we have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Matt. I enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. To learn more about connecting with your audience when communicating, please listen to episode 82 with Nancy Duarte. And to learn more about becoming a better listener, please check out episode 117 with Julian Treasure. This episode was produced by Jenny Luna, Ryan Campos, and me, Matt Abrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder. With thanks to Podium Podcast Company. Please check us out on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram. And check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletter. Hi, Matt here. I can't believe that this month is the six-year anniversary of Think Fast, Talk Smart's launch. As we start the new year, we're excited to bring you even more ways to learn, practice, and grow your communication and career skills. We'll now be releasing 8 episodes a month, coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. For those of you who like to watch your podcasts, we are now posting full video versions of each episode on both Spotify and YouTube. We're moving to a weekly email that shares specifics about the current week's shows and previews what's coming in the future. If you're not subscribed yet, head to fastersmarter.io and hit subscribe. When you do, you'll also start getting our monthly newsletter. Fastersmarter.io is also the place to go for transcripts and show notes for each episode. And under the resources menu, you can find English language learning content for each episode. Speaking of languages, I'm excited to share that a Hindi version of the show is now available. You can get access to our extended Deep Thinks episodes and listen ad-free by subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or at fastersmarter.io/premium. I'd love for you to join us on our Think Fast, Talk Smart learning community, where people from all over the globe are coming together to develop and hone their career and communication skills by taking asynchronous lessons, participating in learning quests, enjoying live author book talks, and getting individual guidance from my AI coach at fastersmarter.io/learning. Be sure to look at our social media channels for our video shorts, frameworks, infographics, and protocols. You can also help us by giving us a 5-star rating and positive review. 2026 is going to be a great year for becoming more confident, clear, and compelling in your communication and career. As always, thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.